The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's Rich Bloomfield.
Good morning. This is Rick Durfee from Phoenix.
Well, I'm in Utah today, and I guess, you know, this time of year, I'm the one that gets the last laugh because it's beautiful here today. It's going to be in the 70s, and I don't have to endure any of that heat in Phoenix. So I hope you enjoy it, Rick.
Yeah, well, my pool is nice and just beautiful.
All right. Today we're going to be, back in January, I think it was our second show, we brought up this topic that we thought was just extremely important. We still think it's extremely important. And the thing is, we're kind of at halftime, not exactly halftime, but we're getting close to halftime in this $5 million gift from Congress game that we've been talking about for many months now, since it was passed back in December of 2010. Now, the this year, of course, as we know, is the last year this is going to be around, at least as far as we know now. And it doesn't seem likely that Congress is going to extend it. I've not heard any talk of that. I haven't seen any proposals from the president on that or from anyone else. So we think, and especially if you're not a gambler, we think that if you've got an estate issue or you can see one looming for your parents or for you or your friends, anyone, we ought to be talking because we only have 7 months now to try to take care of this problem. And it is possible, and it's more possible now than it's ever been, especially if you've got a sizable estate. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about today, Rick.
Now, before we're done, we're going to let people know that making gifts does not necessarily mean losing control. We often hear that phrase, it's not what you own, it's what you control, but nobody really knows what that means. But before the end of the show, we're going to reveal the secret, the deep secret used by wealthy families for generations that enables them to stay in control of what they have given away. And we can make it so the gifts won't be subject to transfer taxes or taken from them by litigation. Because they don't own it, but they can still control it. So that's what we're going to hit before we get to the end. Hey, yeah, you know, I want to mention another thing. This news item we were talking about as we got ready for the show recently here in Phoenix, a poor woman strapped her little 5-week-old baby into a car seat, put the car seat on top of her car and drove off, and the baby fell off in the middle of an intersection and observers ran out and rescued the child. But sometimes it's horrible, and we're all shocked, and she was, in fact, smoking something. But sometimes people do similar things with their estate planning. They've strapped it in a car seat, and they think, I'm done. And they put it on top of their car and drive off. And we see a lot of people that have, in fact, done some things that are good and that are necessary and appropriate in a plan, but they didn't get it done all the way. They didn't do that fine little thing of, let's put the car seat inside the car and strap it down with a seatbelt. So that's a big part of what's going on with this $5 million gift and the transfer tax.
Yeah, Rick, that's a good point because to effectively gift, there are things that we need to do, and you and I spend a lot of time doing those, getting trust set up and other entities set up so that we can effectively gift things. We're going to talk more about why that all works and why it's important. And then we get that finished, and really the end game here is you got to make a gift. And when you make a gift, you have to file a gift tax return. And if you don't do that, and especially this year, that's important, because if you don't file the gift tax return, then you didn't make the gift. You didn't take advantage of this $5 million exclusion, because that's how you do it. You file the return, and it says, I'm gifting all this stuff, but it's under the limit of $5 million or $10 million per couple. And so that's done. And once you file the return 3 years later, the IRS hasn't looked at it, then everything is good to go. People miss that step all the time or don't realize that's what needs to happen. And so very important, and that's a good analogy to this news item that you just brought up. We don't think most of our clients are smoking anything, but
We've even had attorneys say the equivalent, and you and I were talking about this, that, hey, what do you mean? You don't need to put the car seat inside the car and buckle it up. If the child's in a car seat, they're protected. Just put it on the roof and drive around. There are supposedly qualified professionals holding themselves out as estate planners that don't understand gifting, that don't understand discounting or dynasty trust. Their estate plan consists of a simple AB trust, which is a good thing, a very important thing, and a very vital thing, but it's not enough for estates more than $1 million in today's economy.
Right, and it just doesn't get the job done, and it certainly doesn't protect assets. And it's if it's estate planning, it's so minimal that it's almost imperceptible. So, but as you point out, it is a good thing, and there are important things, which we've discussed on this show, that the AB Trust does. So, Rick, we've got these transfer taxes, and as we call them, gift, estate, generation skipping. We've talked about them before, but, you know, why tax dead people in the first place? You know, it seems like these taxes kind of crop up when somebody buys the farm, so to speak.
Yeah, well, not surprisingly, we've had estate taxes longer than any other form of taxation on the federal level. And in fact, estate taxes are the oldest of all taxes. And this is largely because from the beginning of time, it's been a rather unpleasant habit of humankind to rip off dead people. In fact, the oldest human histories are records and accounts of such events of brothers killing brothers to get their property. Dead people have no natural defenses. They can't fight back. So if you're going to rob someone, it helps if they're dead first. And no one gets this better than the politicians. Dead people don't vote. They don't complain. They don't write their congressmen. They don't riot or protest in the streets. They don't march on Washington. So although in some ways with probate and other things, our legal system is designed to slow down or stop the practice of plundering dead guys, politicians have very cleverly carved out an exception for themselves, and the government uses its power and authority to do what would be unlawful for you and I to do, which is go take property from people that have died. And that's in the form of these transfer taxes that you've described.
So explain how these taxes work, Rick. Just a quick general overview.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that Congress, under the Constitution, a variety of taxes were actually prohibited by the Founding Fathers, but one that was allowed was a tax upon the transfer of property. And that can occur while we're living, which is a gift tax. It can occur when we're dead, which is an estate tax. It can occur if we skip our children and give it to the grandchildren, which is a generation skip tax. And curiously, these taxes have been all over the place. Right now, for this little window of time remaining between here and the end of the year, all three of those taxes are unified. And by that, I mean that the exclusion amount, the amount that's excluded from taxes, is the same for all three. So we know what the number is. We can plan for it. We can take all three exclusions all at once, which makes it a very powerful time for planning.
So, Rick, does that mean, you know, I can give $5 million to my kids, $5 million to my grandkids during my life, and then have $5 million also pass estate tax-free when I die?
No. Yeah, that's, wow. That's an awesome question. And actually, that's a question you and I have both been asked. And I know you knew the answer to that question before you asked it. But no, the point is, if you make a $5 million gift, or if you make a $1 million gift, or a $100,000 gift for that matter, it applies against all of them. So that $100,000 gift would use up part of your lifetime exclusion, part of your GST exclusion, if you make it so that it qualifies for GST. The point of being unified is that before they were unified, there was a $3.5 million estate exclusion and only a $1 million gift exclusion. So you could only gift up to $1 million while living without incurring a tax. To get the $3.5 million exclusion, you had to die. And most of our clients, most of my clients, were kind of unwilling to do that. They would prefer to put that off for a little while just yet. And so when we say, well, one tax planning device you can employ is death, they kind of run for the door. They don't like that solution. So
never opted for that one.
Yeah, I've never had one. Somebody take me up on that. But it's nice now that, okay, I don't have to die. I can make the $5 million gift while I'm living.
So what about there are annual gifts that people can make, and most of my clients have heard about those. So you can give away $13,000 to anybody you want. And so does that reduce this $5 million lifetime exclusion?
That's another great thing. The annual gift exclusion is a separate exclusion. So we get the lifetime of $5 million, we get the annual of $13 million, and then there are also certain kinds of things which are not a transfer tax. Support and maintenance. So, for example, if you buy groceries and take them home, and your adult children come and eat dinner with you, that's not a gift. If you pay for certain kinds of expenses directly, particularly education and medical expenses, so if you write a check to the university or if you write a check to the doctor and you don't actually give it to your child, those are not gifts either. So there are all of these non-gift transactions, and there's a variety of those we've mentioned. There's the annual gift exclusions and the lifetime gift exclusions.
Okay, so that kind of lays those all out there, so that because I get asked these questions all the time, particularly in this year, and even advisors who've, you know, worked with clients for a long time get confused on these things, and very understandably so, because they change all the time. So one other thing, Rick, that I've been asked a lot recently, and I find some frustration with this personally, but I've had other professionals who we've been working with a client, and they've said to me, you know, why do we go to all this trouble to move these assets to a trust or out of the taxable estate, when if we left them in and the person died, they'd just get a step up in basis? As though that was a great solution to this. Can you talk a little bit about that, Rick, and explain?
Yeah. Yowza. Wow. Too often, in my opinion, when lawyers or other people say that, that's just a backhanded admission that they don't know what to do. So this lies outside the area of my expertise, so you must not need it, is kind of their approach. In reality, tax planning often comes down to picking your poison. You're going to pay some tax but you can pick which tax, and which tax would you rather pay, the high tax or the low tax? And in this case, estate planning is all about paying the low tax. So to kind of get this cost basis thing, and you and I have worked through this a million times, when we buy something, when we invest in a property or make an investment, it has a cost basis. Well, it's basically what we paid for it. And then hopefully some people can remember when this used to be the case. You buy something at one value and over time it goes up in value. That's called appreciation. It used to happen a lot. Hopefully someday it'll happen again. But if it goes up in value and we sell it, the difference between what we sell it for later and what we paid for it, that's gain, and that's taxable. And it's called capital gain, and it can be short-term or long-term depending on how long we've held it. And it gets taxed both by the federal government and by state and local governments. And at its top rate, if the so-called Bush tax cuts expire, which they're set to do, it's going back to 25% rate for federal, and then whatever the state is depending on where you live. But the marginal estate tax is 45%. So, and if the Bush tax cuts expire, that's going up to 55%. So what would you rather pay, 55% or 25%? What would you rather pay, 45% or 15% under the current rates? It's kind of simple math. It's one of those duh questions. Which tax would you rather pay, the 15% tax or the 45% tax? Now, the gotcha with both these taxes is the taxable event is in the future. So if you're not thinking about the downstream consequences of today's choices, it doesn't always dawn on us that, oh, how I structure my assets has a tax effect because I don't pay the tax now. But those taxes do come at you. We should say the step up in cost basis thing occurs. That's the one and only tax break you get when you die. If you paid $10 for something when you bought it in 1956, and you've held on to it for the last 60 years, and when you die, it's worth $100. So you would have had $90 of gain had you sold it while you're living. Well, when you die, that cost basis steps up to the fair market value on the date of death. So your cost basis would be 100. So now you can sell it, and your capital gains tax is zero. But once again, if goody-goody, we're not going to pay that 15 or 25% capital gains tax. Instead, we're going to pay a 45 or 55% estate tax. It just It doesn't make sense.
So the only situation that makes sense is when there isn't going to be an estate tax. In other words, where your estate is so is below $1 million, I guess, and you know, if we're being realistic here, then. Okay, maybe that makes some sense. Yeah. Let me point out too that, Rick, that very often the assets that people are really wanting to get the step up on are assets that have been held in the family for generations already, so they have very low basis. These are things like farmland, ranches, closely held stock, you know, a cabin, a beach house. And they've been in the family for a long time, and they're a very low basis asset already. And so, you know, the fact that, but they want to keep it in the family. So why would you even be concerned about a step up if you're not going to sell it?
Right.
You'd rather pay the estate tax?
Yeah, which could force a sale. You know, we need to go to break. When we come back, we can talk about balancing estates. And we also want to remind our listeners that we are going to be talking about the deep, dark secret of how to give your stuff away to avoid these taxes and at the same time keep control. We can hit this when we come back from break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
How do you feel about the future? Tune in each week for Visionary Leader Extraordinary Life with host Kate Ebner. You can be a great leader by learning from the inspiring stories of amazing visionaries who are shaping our future. Everyone deserves to create their own vision, and Kate and her guests will share the tools that you need to make it happen. Make a weekly visit to the Voice America Business Channel for Visionary Leader, Extraordinary Life every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Be inspired. Become inspiring.
Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. If you are looking for both an inside and insightful look at what you're not seeing in media coverage of today's legal, business, and policy battles, tune into In the Court of Public Opinion with host Jim Haggerty. What happens in the public arena affects us all. Whether you're following the latest high-profile court case, corporate crisis, or are just interested in government and policy, be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. The witnesses are ready and the jury seated. So join us for our next session in the Court of Public Opinion.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here to talk about this $5 million gift exclusion. And just before break, we were talking about balancing the estate. And Rick, maybe there's something we need to get to before that.
Sure. Kind of as a lead into that, Rich, why don't you talk to us about this $1 million, $5 million, who do these taxes apply to, and how do these numbers work, and actually what's happening on January 1st with these, the $1 million and the $5 million number, and help us make sense of that.
Okay. So first of all, just so that those of you out there who are very technically into this, it's not really 5 million this year. It's actually 5,120,000 because it got indexed at the beginning of the year. So we can actually give more than 5 million, which is good news for many people. But the way this works is that if you have the 5,120,000 applies to an individual. So if you have a couple, it's 10,240,000. And what we're talking, and the reason that we're talking about this and trying to really help people understand it is because on January 1st, 2013, unless Congress does something, what will automatically happen is that we'll go back to a situation where there's $1 million that we have to work with instead of the 5,120,000. Now, in fairness, that 1 million, I don't think anybody's completely sure of this, but it could be because it was indexed for a while. That might be higher than 1 million, but it's going to be in that range. The point is it's going to be about 20% of what it is today. So if an individual has assets in excess of $1 million or a couple has assets in excess of 2 million, then we ought to be talking because most of them plan to live through the year 2012. And we'll be into 2013, and so that's the law that will likely apply to them. I've had people, mostly other professionals, challenge this and say, well, you know, the $5 million might get extended. Well, it might, but, you know, we're depending on Pelosi and Harry Reid to make that happen. And you know, I've had other clients that say, look, I'm not gambling with this. This is the best thing we've ever had. We need to get it done now because who knows what's going to happen in the future. The likelihood with our fiscal state in this country is that it's not going to go up. So why don't we just get it done now? And I think that obviously makes the most sense. And people, of course, think that we're just doing this. It's a self-serving thing as we want to do, help people with this and earn fees, et cetera. But, you know, I've rarely been motivated by that, Rick. It's really, it's when you have an opportunity like this, people ought to be taking advantage of it. And I just hate to see families that have these assets that have been in the family forever that they want to continue, lose them at some point because they didn't take advantage of this when it was right there and they could do it.
You know, I always like to say the prudent thing to do, the most appropriate planning to do is plan on the law that we have. We know what the law is now. We know what it says. We know what it's going to do. It's going to expire on December 31st, this $5 million exclusion is going to go back down to $1 million, even if it's indexed, $1 million and change. And for that to happen, the politicians have to do nothing. To base a plan on what the politicians might do, well, they might do this or they might do that, to me is just outrageously difficult to predict. I've tried predicting what the politicians are going to do, and they have an amazing capacity to surprise me. They just defy prediction, and then they wonder, hey, we don't know what the rules are. We don't know how to plan for the future. And then they wonder, well, why aren't you planning? Why aren't you taking action? They're kind of mystified by the unwillingness of people to take risks when they don't know, what the landscape is. I kind of want to point out that all of this applies. I hear people say, well, I don't have $5 million. Why are you talking to me about this? There's no way that this can even apply to me. So talk to us about how this applies to you, even if your estate is smaller. And I know we've addressed this with a number of our clients, Rich. Talk to us about that issue.
Okay. And first of all, it gets a little confusing to people because the $5 million and then it's $1 million. And so we try to make sure that people understand what we know today is that, it's going back to $1 million. And so if you're married and your estate, is greater than $2 million or, and this is the important point, if you anticipate that it's going to be larger than $2 million, then we need to be talking and doing this planning because this will make a difference to someone in your family that you love and is very important to you at some point. Now, just to give an example of this, I mean, I have hundreds of examples that we could give, but the kinds of things that happen are that people forget that they have a life insurance policy. You know, maybe they're putting away into a whole life policy, or even if it's a term policy. And if that policy pays out during your end, you know, one or the other of you probably will be alive when that happens, then that comes into the taxable estate. People don't realize that because insurance proceeds, everybody says, hey, they're not taxable. Well, they're not income taxable, but they are estate taxable. So that happens. Sometimes people have insurance policies on their parents. And that's a great planning idea. But, you know, when that pays out, your parents die, that's coming into your taxable estate unless you've planned otherwise. A lot of people are, that we work with are entrepreneurs. They start companies and the company is not worth a lot today. We both have hundreds of clients like this, Rick. And then things happen. They run it well, and then suddenly it's worth a lot of money. Well, if you didn't plan for that on the front end, now it's stuck in your estate, and how do you get it out? So it's better to think right now and say, you know, what's the likelihood of this? You know, a lot of people say we're going to have massive inflation. Well, if that's the case, then where do you think your estate's going to go? Maybe your house will even go up in value. That would be a new thing for a few years. But those kinds of things happen to our clients all the time, and then they come in and say, oops, what are we going to do? So that's why this year, when we have such a big window to work with, We really want people to understand this concept.
You know, we kind of mentioned balancing. I want to circle back and just cover that. If an estate is large enough, it does make sense to leave the lifetime exclusion amount in the taxable estate to get the step up in basis. So, for example, on a if the exclusion is $1 million and we have a $2 million estate, we would try and get $1 million out and leave $1 million in so that we have the best of both worlds, no transfer taxes and a step up in basis. That's kind of that balancing concept.
And that's and that makes a ton of sense. And just for those of out there who live in community property states, it's actually a better deal on the step up in a community property state than it is in a non-community property state, because the entire asset is stepped up in basis. In a community property state, even though only one of the spouses dies, and other states just half of it gets stepped up. But that is effective, but it's just the fact that most of the clients and most of the stories we've been talking about here are where we have assets so far in excess of $1 million that we already know about that we shouldn't be spending a lot of time worrying about step up. We should be worrying about getting it out so it's not taxed at 55%.
You know, I want to throw in here, though, very often, and you and I have encountered this a number of times, we get the, I call it widow planning. It's the widow who's got the ranch, and there's no way she can run that thing. She does want to keep it in the family. But now we've had the step up in basis because one spouse has died, especially if we're in a community property estate. Now it's time to get that bad boy out of the estate. Let's do some planning. And tragically, these widows, and it's not always the wife that survives, sometimes it's the husband, but often they're dealing with all of the emotional and family issues of a spouse passing, which are tough and traumatic and highly charged. And it's at that very emotionally difficult moment when some critical tax and financial decisions have got to be made, or if they're not made, the politicians will make the decision for you. And the decision they make on your behalf is not always in your best interest. So even in those situations, it's time to take action. Make a move on those gifts.
Right. And you know, it's those kind of events, Rick. It's not that it's necessarily that it has to be done right at that time. It's just that those kind of events, people suddenly figure out that, man, this is real, and bad things happen, and what if dad's gone, and what if mom's gone? We've got to do something here. And so, you know, those kind of events just trigger this kind of thinking. And so that's why we end up with a lot of times dealing with these kinds of issues also in the midst of emotional recovery from passing and that kind of thing. But it is extremely important. And for a lot of people, I think it's cathartic to go through this process and say, okay, good. Now I'm not going to have, my children are not going to have to endure some of the problems I've endured because I've done my planning now.
Right. Talk to us about, you know, we hear this 5 million or 5.12 exclusion, but how much can we really gift? Is it limited to that? Can we do some fun things that maybe leverage that gift, get it bigger and better? Talk to us about some of those issues.
Okay. Yeah, Rick, there are, I just, over the past few months here, as people have realized that this is happening, I meet with clients whose assets are well in excess of $10 million. They're a married couple. And so the concern is, okay, well, we've got $10 million, so that makes things a lot easier. But is there more that I can do, or am I limited to that? Well, the answer is that you're typically not limited to that. And here's why, is because if we structure the ownership of these assets correctly. And you and I do an awful lot of this kind of planning where we use trusts and we use LLCs, we use LLPs. But the way things are owned makes a difference into what the value is. For example, if what you're gifting is a non-voting, non-controlling interest in an entity, most of us realize that that is not worth as much as if it were voting, and it could control and it could cause disbursements of profits to be made and those kinds of things. So that's also a principle that's recognized by the IRS. And so we're able, if we structure things properly, and we're really good at that, we're able to value these non-voting interests and non-controlling interests that we're gifting at a much, much lower level. And we have valuation experts out there that actually do these kind of studies for us, and that's what we use as backup for the tax return that we file, the gift tax return. And so not that we can say definitively about anything, and this is a gross generalization, but these discounts can be fairly significant. They can be 40-50% sometimes, and I've seen instances where they're even higher than that. So that means that if someone has a $20 million estate and they're a married couple and we structure things properly, then it's possible that we could move all of that, or certainly the bulk of that, with a $10 million gift exclusion. And we could do that upfront, legally, everything in the black, and it would be it's not inexpensive because we have to pay valuation people to do that, but as I explained to clients, you know, it's a spit in the ocean compared to the amount of tax that you're going to save on an additional $10 million in this case. That saves you $5.5 million, just to put it in perspective.
I want to point out here too, the politicians have helped us out on this one. There's another natural discount that's going on. I recently read a news article and it had the hard numbers that I was looking to see if I could find it, but I can't. The number of people that have estates of $10 million or more has declined by about 40%. I'm paraphrasing roughly. It was one number, and that number's dropped 40%. Now, on the one hand, that sounds horrible. Oh, that's awful. All those people lost their money. On the other hand, from an estate planning perspective, that's a score. And here's why. Right now, assets, especially real property assets, are often at an all-time low value. They are worth less today than they are ever going to be worth again. And even with the market being funky and up and down and volatile and all that kind of stuff, eventually inflation is going to kick in, and that the value of that estate is going to go back up. So the timing is critical. It's wonderful to be able to make those gifts when the property's value is down and low and get it out of the taxable estate, so that future appreciation and the future growth that occurs all happens outside the taxable estate. So that growth and appreciation goes on to the next generation, transfer tax-free. And I recently, in fact, went through this with a client who 5 years ago had a very large, tens of millions of dollars, and his estate was down, the value of all of his properties was down 60 or 70% just because of the market. And then we were able to put that in some of these entities you're talking about and get additional discounting, and the effect just saved his children and his grandchildren. You know, he'll be dead, but it saved them tens of millions of dollars, and it's a huge home run from a planning perspective. Rich, I think we need to take a break and come back and hit some of these questions after our break here.
The
business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you're ready to find your personal brand, look no further than Brand Your Fire, Get What You Want Radio with host Monica Magnetti. To achieve success in business, who you are and how you're presenting yourself makes all of the difference. Some of the topics discussed on our show include personal branding, what it is, and how it will help you. We'll discuss the aspects of this, including how to create a brand, drive traffic, and increase SEO. Brand Your Fire, Get What You Want Radio airs live every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news. Stock prices plunging, home prices receding, and unemployment growing. How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Hey, Rick, just as we were going to break, one thing that I wanted to remember to point out when we came back is that when your estate is below the exclusion amount, and you mentioned that there's a huge number of estates that have dropped below the 10 million, there's another nice thing about that. Not only do you can you make these gifts because you're less than 10 million, and you can get it all out. When it's below 10 million and you don't have to worry about discounting and those kind of things that I mentioned, earlier, then the overall cost of this goes down because then you don't have to worry about hiring the valuation people to come in and help you with the discounting so that you can get below that. So overall, the cost is reduced significantly, so that your out of pocket now is less than it would have been. So
that's your present cost.
Yes.
And I want to add to that your future cost at death is also reduced in that situation. When we can successfully get an estate below the estate tax threshold at death. So when the grantor, when mommy or daddy pass away, their net estate, because of all the gifting they've done, is underneath the exclusion amount. We don't have to do an estate tax return, what's called a 706. So when you don't do the estate tax return, first of all, you don't have to pay for that return. Plus, then there's no mechanism that triggers an automatic audit. Just about all of those 706s, those estate tax returns, get audited. The IRS looks at them with great scrutiny to find any way they can to work in a tax. But if there's no return, there's no audit. So, and I guess an example of this is last year, just at the end of 2011, I had a longtime client who lived into his 90s. Pass away, and we started his planning back in the early 90s, with a very, very large estate, tens of millions of dollars, and using some of these devices, some annual gifts, some lifetime gifts, some discounting and things like that, we had moved basically the entire estate out. And his net estate when he passed away was well below $1 million, and there was no gift tax returns. It was just nothing. So it made the succession for the next generation very simple, very straightforward, no complexity. And in his case, because of the dynasty planning that we had done, his children now enjoy the benefit of that planning. With huge asset protection and other features. So,
you know, Rick, that might be an important thing. Obviously, before we go end the show, we need to discuss how you can retain gift things and retain control of them. But I thought it might be interesting to talk about a couple of other things before we got there. What I was going to talk about kind of slipped my mind, though. So I'm going to throw it back to you.
Well, let's talk about our big question. What's the big secret? How to give away stuff and keep control? And bottom line, it involves two pieces of equipment, two tools that we want to use, and one of them is the irrevocable dynasty trust, which is a trust outside the taxable estate for the benefit of children or grandchildren or whoever the heirs are going to be, and it has a number of really cool features in that will take another hour to talk about some other time. So, but we're going to use that dynasty trust, and that's the catcher's mitt into which we're going to make the gifts. Now, the question is, what will the gifts consist of? And the answer is one or more of these business entities that we've actually mentioned earlier in the show, either a limited liability company, an LLC, or a limited partnership or a limited liability limited partnership. You can pay for extra L's if you need one. But with these devices, and let's talk about the limited partnership because it's the most obvious, there are two kinds of partners. There's a general partner and a limited partner. By law, the general partner must control, and by law, the limited partner can't control. So what we do is we form this partnership and we capitalize it by putting in all the real property and the business interests and the non-qualified investment portfolio assets, and we fund this limited partnership with all this stuff, and it's the basket that holds everything. And then we're going to let our children hang on to the handle of that basket. We're going to let our children have some ownership in that basket. We're going to gift some limited partnership interest to that irrevocable dynasty trust. And because we've made the gift, our children now have equity. They ultimately get it. It belongs to them when we die, but it's governed by the terms of the trust. And it's only a limited partnership interest, which means they have equity, but they have no control. So who has control? Mom and Dad do, who set this thing up by structuring it with Mom and Dad as the general partner. They get to make all the decisions on buying and selling and investing or not. And we carefully structure this so that Mom and Dad are able to support their lifestyle, and they can receive partnership distributions as well as management fees. There can also and should be partnership distributions to the dynasty trust they may pass out to the children, but they also typically stay in the trust. And the bottom line is Mom and Dad can decide from year to year, okay, yes, we want to allow the dynasty trust to distribute to the children. We're going to give them some Christmas money this year. Or no, we're going to retain the money in the trust because we have it invested in some common asset. So that combination, irrevocable dynasty trust and the business structures, allows us to give away estates and at the same time keep control. That's also the device that enables us to take advantage of some of these discounting features, and properly used, some of those devices also allow us to get some of the asset protection that we want in this kind of planning.
So, and one other thing that may not be obvious as we talk through that is that, you know, we don't always put all of the assets in this LLP that you were talking about directly. Many, many times we don't. And that LLP is kind of a master or holding company for the family, and it might own a number of other LLPs or LLCs which own individual assets, because it's never a great idea to put a bunch of assets all into the same entity, because then they generate risk for each other. And so, but so the risk thing is important, because by isolating each of them in their own entity, you isolate the risk, and they don't spread that risk across to the other assets. But it also, every time you go across an ownership line, when you're doing this discounting that we talked about, there's an additional discount. And so, and you know, the valuation people get into that, but we've learned over the years that that can be a very important aspect when you've got a very large estate and you're trying to bring the values down. So we usually try to balance this. We don't like entity proliferation. It becomes too complicated when you have so many, but at the same time, it helps with asset protection, and it helps with bringing the value down if you've got a very large estate. So, Rick, what I've had this question, and we ought to address it before we close. What happens if you do the $5 million gift this year, and then the law changes back to $1 million next year?
You're grandfathered in, hopefully. So if you take the gift and you do all of the due diligence in terms of reporting it and filing the tax returns, it's your home clear. They can't come back and say, oh, you made that gift, it was tax-free last year, but we're now going to retroactively tax you. Nope, those gifts are done. They're complete. They're out of your taxable estate. So you've used up that exclusion, and whatever they do in the future, now you've got that those horses in the corral, or that water under the bridge, whatever metaphor you want to use. It's grandfathered in, so you're done. That's the home run that we all want. And you know, in a time of tax volatility, which I think is one way to characterize what's going on right now, we really don't know what the taxes are going to be. We know that whatever they are, they're going to change. We know that if the past is any indicator of the future, the change will probably not be something that we like. Very often, even politicians will say, their lips will say, I'm going to reduce taxes, and they're lying. Really, it's a backhanded, clever way of disguising the tax. So it's a new, different kind of tax. We renamed it something else, and we told you it was going to apply to somebody else, not you. But then we discover, wait, I'm paying that tax.
For example, Rick, I've seen some of the latest proposals, and this is on the income tax side of the world, not the estate tax, but the latest proposals that I've seen there are that they're going to reduce rates, but they're going to increase the number of things that are taxed and reduce deductions. In other words, mortgage interest, for example, might be on the table to be reduced or cut. Charitable contributions seem under the Obama administration to be very at risk. And so that's one of these clever ways that you're talking about, where they're going to say, look, rates are going down, but overall, obviously, what they're trying to do is increase revenue. So they're just broadening the base that they're going to tax.
So when you hear the politicians talk about revenue positive tax cuts, no, they, especially if they're Keynesian economists, where they believe that taxing is good. Taxing stimulates growth, the Keynesians do, which is kind of a bizarre idea. But there are politicians and economists who actually believe that, that if you take property from people, they'll be more incentivized to produce. But when they talk about if we can just we're going to call this a tax cut because that will make it popular, but in fact it's a tax increase, often happens. We're down to where we need to start identifying what we want to tell our listeners they should be doing with all this good stuff here.
Well, yes, and so I guess the most important thing about today's show is it's important to make lifetime gifts now while they're $5 million. Let's get it grandfathered in under the law that's in effect today. Let's don't gamble. Let's take care of it now, because many of you out there will have assets in your estate today, whether that's penny stocks from a company that you just started or real estate that you purchased when it was all down during this downturn. Those things are going to go up in value. And so even if you're not sure that it applies to you today, we ought to be making those gifts and getting them out of the estate, freezing the estate, so to speak. And we should be doing that using an integrated dynasty plan so that we can retain leadership, we can protect assets, and we can retain control even when we've given a lot of the value away.
You know, I want to kind of add on this. We talk about a tax volatile time. These transfer taxes, they're not going away. We're going to have them in one form or the other. So putting it off is just delaying the inevitable. And if we don't take control of our planning and come up with our own ideas on how things ought to be structured, the politicians have a plan for us. And their plan involves tax maximization, whereas when we do our own plan, it involves tax minimization. So take control of your life, make your own decisions instead of leaving them up to the politicians.
And we will be back next week to discuss more things on this show of What About Wealth?
For listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.